Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, hello, everyone.
Everyone, it is the Red Men Originals podcast. It is an international break, which is
rubbish.
I mean, here we are. It doesn't feel like that long, but there's been a lot of football happens, a lot of incidents, a lot of intrigue. So maybe it is for the best that we don't have any Liverpool for a couple of weeks. But we will be looking back on Liverpool 2-2 Brighton before we kind of wrap up this little spell from the start of the season up till now, really, and see what we've learned. If we've got any greater insight into what Jürgen Klopp and the boys are doing and what they're likely to do.
I've got any great insight, Paul, but I did have
says the man who runs our tactics and insight show. Brilliant.
I did have a realisation yesterday that life would just be much better if the Premier League and all the international football was synced up with kids half terms so that people can just go away without missing the footy and it would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Instead of like 2 weeks before the half terms.
No, actually, because it's cheaper to sack the kids off and go away in the international break.
Okay.
Think of it that way. Your breaks from football would be loads more expensive.
Schools. Oh, what do you mean? I'm gone.
Do you mean taking the kids with you?
No, I'm saying your breaks are more expensive. That's not how you talk about your children.
It absolutely is. I hate the things they do, but I like them.
Speaking of things that we hate,
did you take the kids away on Friday?
I see them all the time. Yeah, I like my wife. That's what I like. Brighton 2, Liverpool 2. Chloe, you were there. And still haven't physically recovered from the endeavour of it. It was frustrating, I think, is the general gist, as you can tell from all of our faces on all of our thumbnails at the weekend. The slight consolation from this is I think Brighton are probably just as frustrated, which isn't from a solid pull, but who cares that Brighton are frustrated, I guess. But what I mean is Brighton had opportunities. Brighton could have won that game quite easily, and Liverpool could have won it quite easily. And when Jürgen Klopp comes out and says it's probably therefore a fair result, that's kind of where I'm at. I take a bit of solace in the fact that, it could have gone either way, really.
Yeah, it was that first half that was quite shocking from a Liverpool perspective. It felt like we couldn't get anywhere near them. We respected them a little bit too much. But it just felt like their high press, Liverpool just couldn't counteract it. They couldn't adapt to it. And they could have had two, maybe three going into half-time. They had a couple of corners back-to-back where they were just so cheeky. And I just sat there and was like, wow. Fair play, that's so smart. Like, what a routine that is that yous have came up with. And they got a bit unlucky with the finishing, just going past the post. Alisson had on the day to make a couple of really good saves. And they were stunned when Liverpool got one back and they hadn't recovered from that and we'd already got a second. And it was kind of like, how the hell have we ended up 2-1 up at half time? Like, this is so undeserved, but we take it. And in the second half, because you're from that point of view where you're actually ahead and we were on top the majority of the half, we came out, we were a better side, but the problem was we didn't put the ball in the back of the net when we were on top, and ultimately we could have made it 3-1 and the game could have been done, but actually we didn't, and it finishes 2-2 with 12 minutes to go. It's really frustrating in that aspect, but yeah, on the day Brighton were really good in that first half and continued to attack us dangerously in the second, but Liverpool from where they were should have finished the game off.
Chloe mentioned respect there, Dan, do you think that's the case? First half we were a little too wary of what they were likely to do to us and didn't necessarily impose ourselves on the game.
It felt like that a little bit, definitely, certainly in hindsight. I mean, you've got to respect Brighton, you've got to sort of give them their due for how good a football inside they are. I think Jurgen Klopp's the best coach team in the country. So he's going into that game expecting a tough challenge. I mean, we've seen how poorly we played on two occasions there last season. So we do have to guard against that a little bit. And you can't just go all guns blazing and try and blow them out of the water, because that's very difficult to do, certainly away from home. But I think maybe we went too far that way, because when you've got the firepower that we possess, albeit without Jota and Gakpo and obviously Curtis Jones yesterday, there is a little bit of me that just says, just go and take the game to them. Like, how many times have we gone 1-0 down this season? Now it's mad, isn't it? Maybe we're playing side sort of carte blanche, too much respect, because it keeps happening to us now. And you do just wonder, like, when we get into the game, and you guys have mentioned Ropado quite a lot, we are doing that quite clearly. When we do get into the game, we really sort of stamp our authority. We're too good for teams. When we go at them, we're too good. And we've seen that yesterday in that 5-6 minute period at the end of the first half. So maybe we are being a little bit too cautious and trying to feel our way into the game and throw some jabs and just see what they're all about. And maybe we do need to, after this break, need to change our approach slightly and come out a little bit more front foot and be a bit more aggressive. Because sides like Brighton, if you give them too much respect, they'll hurt you for it. Like, albeit the mistake that ends up costing us the first goal. Like, if you let a team like Brighton have possession of the football, or indeed a Man City further down the line, or whoever it may be, they've got quality, so they're going to hurt you. And we just need to back ourselves a little bit more, maybe. That's what I'm trying to say.
I agree on that. I don't think we truly backed ourselves until the second half, Chris. And you can see it in the performances in the midfield in particular. Like, Szoboszlai comes into the game in the second half. Ryan Gravenberch comes onto the pitch and comes into the game. McAllister looks like the game's about to swallow him whole in the first half, but by the time the second half comes around, Liverpool have established themselves. And I think it's that. It's, if we're rebuilding, we're going up against a challenge. Brighton were clearly our kryptonite last season. And if you go in gung-ho and all guns blazing, there's actually nothing to stop them doing exactly what they did to us last year. I bet we've got more energy in the midfield. So it feels like there was a little bit of that. We were made probably cagier than, well, whether that's tactical, I don't know, but that might just be psychological from the players as well.
It might be. I think the way that they didn't press us actually in the first half was what caused us a few issues, in that they weren't expecting Brighton to sit off and just let the defenders have the ball. And then as soon as we tried to move it into the middle of the park, because they've got extra bodies in the middle of the park, they compressed it and they had more players in the middle of the park. And it made it really difficult for us to build through the centre, even with the box midfield. You know, we do that box midfield so that we get numbers superiority in there. We didn't have numbers superiority because their forward was dropping in. And yeah. The wingers were compressed and in there as well. And so it made it difficult for us. And that's why I think it came across like it was a cagey start, but they'd done something that we didn't expect. So they were then having to go, right, okay, well, when we do this, what are you going to do? To try and work out, well, actually, if you're going to do that, this is what we need to do in the first instance and stuff. And that happens all the time, and it always has happened with Jurgen Klopp sides. You know, I've always seen them, and I remember a few years ago where Emre Can played a ball over the top against, I think it might have been Watford or something, and it's a hopeless ball, but you see how they're going to defend that situation, and then you put that idea in, right, they can go long, do they sit 5 yards deeper, does it open a little bit more space for us to play through the middle? And stuff like that. So, and I think Brighton, on the other hand, when we were pressing them, we knew that they were going to play out from the back, and we didn't want to overcommit to that. And I think the big change for us in the build-up play was Alisson going into the defensive line, which ended up catching us out at one point. But also in when we were trying to press them, we didn't want to overcommit. But actually, what ended up happening is, you mentioned it on the watch long a couple of times, Virgil van Dijk would go into the midfield and be aggressive, and Joel Matip did it at times. So we were pressing in a slightly different way. So when you're doing new things, you need to be a little bit more cautious about it. You can't just go gung-ho because they're doing what they always do and you're doing something new, which quite often means they're better at it than you are.
Yeah.
So be cagey, make sure you get it right. I understand it completely.
Yeah. The first goal, I mean, obviously it's the big talking point, and I think it's probably led to the most talking points around the footballer afterwards. Chloe, Alexis McAllister, the lads have given their opinion on the instant match reactions last night. We'll talk a bit about it in general, but I don't like this playing game thing of, like, let's just point exactly whose fault it is. However, tell me what you thought, let's say, about the goal that we conceded, the first one.
Well, it felt like we were being suffocated, and like you said, they didn't press high, but it felt like they were man-to-man, so it felt like Liverpool couldn't get out. And I remember sat there and I thought, we can't keep doing this. We need to change something. And a ball obviously comes to Virgil, and he sets one inside to McAllister. It's not the most perfect ball in the world, but still, for some reason, Alexis McAllister is just not switched on. He's not sharp enough. Brighton was so much sharper in that first half specifically. And there's like three men chasing him down. Why he thinks he has all the time in the world. He's not checked his shoulder. And he loses the ball. It's our players not being sharp, not doing a simple pass correctly, but then also not being aware of your surroundings. And, you know, we were 10, 15 minutes into the game then, so you should know. They've been doing this for 10 minutes at this moment in time. You should know what you should be expecting. And, yeah, no one reacts to the fact that this youngster who absolutely took the mick in that first half against us picked the ball up. Alisson Becker was nowhere to be found because he was playing as a centre-back near. And the ball didn't even have any pace on it and ended up in the back of the net. And our away end was fuming because it was like, even though they came out and they were doing something that we didn't expect, Liverpool still seemed just too, not lazy, but just not awake. It was like we were just too slow. It was like lethargic passes. And we know Liverpool do that. We usually concede the first goal, but it's the worrying thing is it's teams like Brighton where you can't concede those goals, you can't start games early, because like I mentioned, if they get a little bit of luck here and there with a finish, it could have been 3-0 at half time if Liverpool, and by that time, you know, if they're 2-3 goals up, Liverpool might not have that good spell where they actually get back into it and shock and stun Brighton. But yeah, the first goal is just comical from Liverpool.
It's for me, and again, the pass from Van Dijk isn't perfect. It needs a bit more on it. If he's, it's hard to judge because for me, I think McAllister's a bit flat-footed. Then ultimately, he gets caught a little bit cold by it. I don't think he should be kept cold because he's effectively the nearest midfielder to it. His job is to take the ball off the centre halves in that position. But he is. So in that instance, Van Dijk then needs to put a little bit more on it or give him a little bit more of a shout or whatever. It opens up the wider conversation though around that position and his suitability for it. See, my contention on this is, because again, it just means that it therefore must be Endo that has to play for us. I've not seen anything that says Endo's better at that than McAllister is, and I think that's the kind of reason why McAllister's in, because he's trusted to take the ball and move it on quickly under pressure. So for me, you're playing against a team that presses. We get our goals from doing similar sort of things. Sometimes you've kind of just got to shrug. But you think it's all Virgil van Dijk's fault?
I do think it's all Virgil van Dijk, yeah. I take the point, and I mean, total agreement that McAllister is flat-footed. He needs to be more aware. And I think it is a little bit sort of indicative of the fact he's not a natural. It's not sort of second nature to him to, in that position, to be completely aware of what's going on around you. He scans one shoulder, maybe not the other one. But you said it there, Chloe. There's three men all sort of converging on him at once. Like, that pass cannot go to him. And if it does go to him, it has to be absolutely on point. Pace, precision, the lot. And it's not. For me, the pass should never go to him in the first place. He's got Robertson completely open on the left-hand side. He's got a big diagonal switch to Salah, which I looked at before. Salah's completely unmarked. Virgil van Dijk does that in his sleep, just shifts out of his foot and goes. What's he doing if it's McAllister? Virgil van Dijk can see the entire picture. He can see those three Brighton lads getting closer and closer and sensing blood to McAllister. Albeit McAllister does need to do better when the ball is played, Virgil van Dijk's holding down the river there for me. I'm not having it. And I watched it back before when we had a mini debate, and the pass actually gets worse every time I watch it. It's nowhere near hit well enough.
Is that
it's
not
terrible.
Confirmation bias, Dan? Because you're looking for it to look worse.
I actually wouldn't have minded sort of flipping my opinion a little bit and a bit more critical on McAllister, because on the McAllister thing, I thought he had a really poor 45 minutes yesterday. Genuinely, I was annoyed yesterday, as Chris will attest to. I thought he was way off it. I thought he didn't look at the races. I thought he looked sluggish. I take your point on Endo, and I don't know whether he is the better or even at the same level as McAllister, and that's kind of the problem, isn't it? Is because we clearly didn't fix the problems we would have liked to have done in the summer. So now we've got probably until January at least of McAllister doing this potentially. And in terms of personnel, like, he is one of the better players that we have. He's one of the better midfield options that we have. But is he ideally suited to this role? I'm having major doubts now because I just don't see it. I'm not I've not seen enough evidence of him in the six, certainly in games whereby Liverpool don't dominate possession, to suggest that he's the answer. Because, again, things like what happened yesterday, the giving away a foul, being the wrong side of people, not being able to sort of get back and help out, that's going to keep happening. So I hope I'm wildly inaccurate and he proves to be brilliant, because you're right, he's a technician. He's a lovely footballer to watch. He plays passes into the final third, but you're going to have to do a lot more than that as a deepest midfielder for Liverpool at the moment, and I'm not sure he's got that in the locker.
Thoughts on that, Clem?
100%. There was a lad who picked the ball up in their half and drove 70 yards up the pitch, and I wanted to murder every one of our midfielders at that point.
That was the point at which I thought McAllister's done here.
Yeah.
Because he looked knackered.
Shattered.
He looked absolutely
had his hands on his knees, bent over when they won a corner. Like, and I was surprised. We were talking about, like, on the stands, we were like, there's no physicality in this midfield. Like, you've got a 6 foot something lad there in Gravenberch who'd bully people. And Harvey Elliott, I'm not really putting blame on him. I thought actually when Liverpool were on top, him down that right hand side with Salah was really good. I actually enjoyed him when Liverpool woke up and got into the game. But we were being shrugged off the ball. We were not sharp enough, not aware of our surroundings. People were just running off us by 10, 15 yards and no one was tracking back. And that first half, you were screaming for someone to just come on and shove someone off the ball and just keep the ball and protect it. And it felt like none of our midfielders could do that. It was the first game in which I'd not seen Sob out. Like, the first time I saw him was when he won the penalty. Yeah. And I was like, how has he been so ineffective? Like, he's usually the one who moves into the space and asks for it every single time. And like you mentioned there, I don't want to see McAllister at DM. I just don't. And I know that might be our only option, but I'm okay with it if you're at home and you know you're going to have the majority of possession. Because I believe you don't need someone like Endo on that pitch for that game. Like, Union St. Gilloy, having McAllister there sounds like, I can understand that, obviously not in terms of it being Europa League and us needing a break, but they're the games I can understand with them being at DM. A game where you're not going to have loads of possession, it might be 50-50 even, and you need someone to make crunching tackles, or someone when we do get caught to be the last line of defence and help us out. He's not that kind of player, and it's not his fault either.
This is where I disagree with everybody, to be honest. I think we're being majorly critical on McAllister. I don't think that was a game for a six like a Makélélé. I don't think we needed that type of a six in that game, and there is a school of thought whereby when you don't have a lot of possession, isn't it better to have someone who can cut through them quickly, who's better passer of the ball, who can see those options when you only have 35% of the ball and you don't have 70% of the ball?
I think we're too, more possession than Brighton on the game.
I think we're too quick to look, he's what, 7, 8, 9 games into his Liverpool career. I think we're being too quick to judge him in this one. It was a midfield that hasn't started together. You know, he's not played with Sobo on the left-hand side of him. He's not played with Harvey Elliott from the start of a game before against a very well-drilled Brighton side, which we've all admitted at times. So I think, you know, for me, it's not the fact that he's not a destroyer that we concede that first goal.
Yeah.
It's the fact that, you know, the ball is Virgil van Dijk. So you're apportioning no blames McAllister in this instance. I apportion sort of 50-50, to be honest with you. But it ain't because he's not a destroyer. And his legs did fall off. 100% agree with that. And there was that one where he's running and, like, someone goes past him as we're running back and stuff. But, like, let's give the lad time. We know that he's not really a six, but Jürgen's picking him in that position because I think he thinks he's better than Endo. And that's enough for me. You know what I mean? I don't see the point. No, well, we should play the worst player. Okay, well, fine. If anyone can honestly put their hand up and go, Endo's better, sounds, I'm all for it. But I just don't think I could tell you that he is or isn't at that role.
That's interesting, that, because there comes a point whereby you need specialists for specialist positions. Because I take your point, and I'm not criticising McAllister sort of moreover, because I think he's a really good footballer and I think he will be a brilliant buy for the Liverpool Football Club.
It's unfair that he's not actually playing in
his natural
position. It's a little
bit unfair. I feel a bit, he looks really low in confidence. He looks bereft of confidence to me right now. And even the use of the ball yesterday I thought was quite poor at times. Like, he got a little bit passive, a little bit laboured, under-hitting stuff, just never really got into the game at all. Even the second half, I think he improved slightly, but not really. Yeah. But at some point, it harked back to the season where we had no centre-backs and went to Fabinho and Henderson back there until eventually Jurgen Klopp went, I've got a couple of centre-back lads there. All right, they're not perfect, but at least they're centre-backs.
The counterpoint to that, though, is we had a six last season and we were much worse in midfield.
He blew up, didn't he? He blew completely.
But, like, we were always talking throughout the season, every one of us was talking, well, is it because Hendo and that's legs have fallen off? Well, show me his other midfielders in that first half. And tell me they were involved in the game and helped McAllister.
No, they didn't.
They didn't do fuck all.
But again,
McAllister's the one that's getting the brunt of three people's workload.
And I would point out, again, he's getting the blame because he gets caught flat-footed on a pass when he's an absolute technician. If even he, my argument is if even he can get caught out, then sometimes shit happens. And I get it. This is not in defence of the one that Chloe mentioned earlier, where they beat our press in their half and then free run through the middle, and he's chasing back at half pace because he's got nothing left in the tank to get back. That's almost a different thing. But again, that happens when we play the way we play. Other people have to get back in and help out in those environments. I take the point. I'm not sure that. No one plays with a destroyer. Like, destroyers don't exist anymore. We have this notion, this false notion of, like, there's going to be like no one has a Claude Makélélé anymore. You know what I mean? Maybe someone, I'm sure there's someone in the comments going, absolutely, there is someone who plays. But he's not a destroyer, is he?
He's got everything.
He's a complete central midfielder, Roger.
But have you seen how many times he wins the ball?
I was surprised that McAllister
didn't get destroyers yellow cards yesterday.
Destroyers can't pass and can't dribble and don't score goals, is my point.
So he's got all that, but he doesn't necessarily have the other side of it, which is where my concern lies, personally. That's where I'm at. And listen, again, I reiterate the fact I think he's boss.
It's the same as when we played Thiago in DM in that season. Exactly. He's tigerish, and he's good at winning the ball, but he's better at winning the ball back 20 yards up the pitch than where he is from that. He's not great at being an anchor man, which is a bit more of what we're asking him to do. But again, it comes back to it. I think the logic is absolutely sound on that. There's going to come a point where we're going to have to just go with Endo in that position because you reckon McAllister or in danger of reckoning McAllister by having him have all this weight on his shoulder, the same we had with Thiago. It's like, just get if we've got a DM, get him in the DM. But
The thing I'd say is the problem we had was I understood he did it in a double pivot, and once again, I don't think you actually saw that yesterday in the first half because we didn't have possession. Trent Alexander-Arnold couldn't wander into midfield and just stand. He had to go touch tight and go on the wing. That he had to stay in his position. So that was the problem I had, was McAllister was on his own, having to be that sole DM. Only when in possession of the ball, and Trent comes into that, do we then sit with two? But we didn't. We were getting bullied out of possession. Literally for 38 minutes, it felt like Liverpool hadn't touched a ball to me. Like, and I know we had, but it felt like that because they were so high up on us, and they kept winning the ball back, and they kept, when we pressed them, they were just passing it round us like no one was there. And when he's your only DM, and look, I think he's an unbelievable footballer, and I wish he would just play in the position that we bought him for. I understand why he's not. I get that, but I'd like to see what he's about in that position for Liverpool. The problem.
We were all hoping Endo would be the guy to start. On that though, I think there's a little bit of how you feel in the game is not necessarily how the game went, because we were looking at the possession stats throughout that first half, and Liverpool had the possession for a good chunk of that first half. Then Brighton rested back control, and then we're going quite even. I think
our possession was a lot to do with us passing around the back five. But they were doing the problem, and I understand that.
That was exactly how that was all their possession.
But on the defending side of things, we didn't defend with just McAllister in front of the back four. We were going dropping into a 4-4-2. We had Nunes and Salah up top. Diaz was on the left wing. Harvey Elliott was on the right. Again, I can't pinpoint when everyone says to me, McAllister was on his own on an island. That's the system's fault then.
Yeah.
If McAllister's on his own on an island, it's not McAllister's fault. If McAllister goes in for a tackle and the fella goes round him, like we saw countless times with Fabinho last season, that's him not being a six or a good enough tackler. That wasn't the case yesterday for me.
Yeah.
There's one, he gives away a dangerous free kick. He's probably gone a little bit too far. Yeah. There's a moment.
Name a player yesterday who didn't.
No, I get it.
Canate did, Matip did, Trent did. They all did.
Ultimately, what it boils down to is kind of the point, I mean, Chloe just mentioned there, is we signed him to play in a certain role, and he's not doing it.
Yeah.
We signed him. Fabinho was still at the club when we signed him, so we probably should sort of counter that into it as well, because we might not have expected it if we did expect Fabinho to leave. Signed him, and again, layman's terms, most simplistic of points ever, he wears a number 10 on his back,
yeah,
and he's playing proper deep. That can't be right.
If he's the number 10, then he should be perfectly adept at having a ball played into him with his back to the player.
I don't blame him for that. So.
This isn't looking at his performance yesterday. That's something else. And I would agree with you there completely. I want to see McAllister further full pause. Yeah. I've mentioned it. Yeah. All three of us wanted to see Endo, McAllister, Szoboszlai. But that doesn't affect McAllister's performance yesterday, which is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I still don't think it was good enough. And people.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Like, I adore the lad. I think he's a superstar. I really do. But I thought he had a torrid first half in that game. I was surprised he didn't get booked. I felt like he'd made about five tackles in and around the area, and I was like, my God, it's like Rodri this, he's not being booked, has that happened? And I was like, oh, for once. I just felt he didn't get close enough to players, and I totally take into consideration I probably shouldn't be I shouldn't be sat here thinking he should be doing that because he's not a DM, but also if he's playing there, that is now your responsibility to do that. And I understand other players have to help, and we didn't see them either, but it just felt like even on the ball in that first half he really struggled.
Look, like we said before, Liverpool are set up to, you know, to pressing is how we win the ball back, so it's actually not the defensive midfielder's job to win the ball back for Liverpool, it's the five lads set ahead of him whose job, and that's actually when we do have our success, is when that starts to work for us and we catch Brighton out. Mm-hmm. You know, we, and that's something that you get better at when you get a greater understanding of how that team's play. That's where I think we've not been great in first halves, but actually we're putting the groundwork in for great second halves because of how we're figuring out the opponents and blah blah blah. On a wider sense, actually, there's the super chat in on the McAllister thing here from the detective. Says Klopp says Mac can play the position if we defend well as a team. We didn't do that yesterday and missed Jones massively. The sooner we get Thiago and Bacetic back, the sooner we have options. The Bacetic one's another interesting one for me. Again, he's this is the thing. Yes, Thiago, because he could have at least give him half an hour here and there, and you've got a similar kind of footballer in. But the Bacetic stuff is a real shame. He's had a setback because he wasn't far away from being able to just start some of them football matches, because he's closer to that, what I'm talking about, of like that potentially complete midfielder. He's not strong enough yet, and he's not experienced enough yet, but he loves a tackle. He's
got the raw attributes.
Exactly. And he's very cultured on the ball as well. But like McAllister's being a little bit sold short, but that's the nature of how our squad is constructed.
He's right though. I mean, the Jones things I think is really interesting from there, because it's funny, you know, even the watch along comment section were like, oh God, we're missing Jones. And the watch along comment sections normally don't like Jones. Hate Jones. hate him. So and it is, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, isn't it, type of thing. And in this case, Kurt Jones is the one.
The other big incident of the game. In fact, actually, before we do, let us know your thoughts on that. You know, what's your thoughts on McAllister's six so far? Your thoughts on the Endo situation? What Liverpool are doing with that? Because I do think it is interesting. My general overlying take on this is just that I don't think there's a perfect answer, and we presume Endo must be it. But I've been a Liverpool fan when everyone's gone, why isn't Sean Dundee playing? Why just stick him on? Just give Sean Dundee a game. Sean Dundee didn't play for Liverpool because he's fucking rubbish. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Endo is that, but until I see him start games, good important games ahead of McAllister, then, you know, he's nothing. He's barely a footballer for us at this point.
If that's the case, why have we bought him?
Because I think the same. I'm not saying this is categorical, this is my opinion. We bought Ben Davies because we needed a centre. We needed someone who could play centre half. And when we had Ben Davies in, it gave us a little bit of negotiating room to wait and try and get Ozanka back in. Now, neither were successes for Liverpool, but given the market we were in, we needed someone who could actually play that. And he can do that. He's played games of football for us, so that's why we've bought him. We've bought him as a backup number six. We just don't have in my opinion, we don't have a first choice number six at the moment, so we're making do. Yeah. Now, I think we're doing okay so far.
I think you're spot on. Well, I think Bacetic's injury had something to do with it. I think if Bacetic never picked up that injury, I don't think we'd have gone in the market for a backup six. But I do think they were a little concerned about re-aggravations and stuff coming back from a long injury, which to be fair, has proved to be right.
Okay, the other big incident then, the penalty. Now, me and Chris had a bit of back and forth on this during
the watch-along. Understand what the hell was going on, because we were talking about the replays and stuff. So I ended up asking Dan in the instant match reaction, going, why did they keep on showing the replay? I thought, honestly, that, you know, it was all to do with the fact that, like, it wasn't a penalty, but it's obviously the double jeopardy, which we discussed for a minute or two and put it to bed type of thing, isn't it? So, yeah, it was a bit of a nuts one.
So, by all accounts, the rules have been well-researched by Liverpool Twitter, obviously, and because it's denying the goal scoring opportunity.
There's no genuine attempt at playing the ball.
And there's no genuine attempt at playing the ball, then it should be a penalty and a red card. But then here we are again questioning officials. I mean,
well, the officials have come out this morning, haven't they? You've seen what they've said. And said because he didn't have the ball, he'd have had to have won the ball.
He just...
It's not a red card. But lad, if he wasn't pulled back by his neck, he'd have had the ball. Yeah.
I wondered whether they were going to go down the route of saying actually the penalty was given for the Diaz foul that followed on as the quickest get out of jail free card of all time on that one.
Make shit up as they go along, don't they? They just make shit up. That's all they do.
Here we are again, down another week, another one like this. And that's because Anthony Taylor, actually, the way he points towards,
I think he was
Diaz.
Going, if it wasn't for that, it was for that.
Yeah.
They were both nailed on pens. Like, if there was any complaint about the first one, then just look at the second one. And I've seen people on Twitter, rival fans, saying, have they got a penalty for this X player? This happens to him every week. And then you look at it, just roll it on like a second later and just see Diaz get wiped out clean as well. You're like, no, whichever one, we'll take either. But it is absolutely the first one. Pascal Gross has him by the neck, doesn't he? Rags him to the floor. But how they can even begin to fathom that it's not a goal-scoring opportunity, I will never understand. It's almost like done exactly the right thing. He shifted out of his feet, and we know he's got a left foot on him, even though it's his weaker side. He's about to just welly that at the goal. I know Lewis Dunk is sort of on his way back, but by the time Szoboszlai set himself and hit that, it's beyond the keeper. It's just in the back of the net. It's done. So it's laughable, really. But what makes it even worse, if that was at all possible, given how bad the decision it is, and the justification is also terrible, he wasn't even booked.
Yeah,
he didn't even get a yellow for that. He
ended
up scot-free, just a penalty. Like, it's mayhem. And I've even seen, like, the most ardent of referee supporters come out and say, yeah, I can, you know, back in the day, I can understand why they haven't sent him off, but it's got to be a yellow, and it was nothing.
Anyone feel like there was a bit of overcorrection from Anthony Taylor refereeing that game, you know, just based on what's been going on the last couple of weeks? Because we were a bit shocked when the first yellow card got handed. I think the second yellow card of the game was like De Zerbi for kicking off at the Van Dijk penalty decision.
Well, I was convinced that we'd had yellow cards already, so
we were the first yellow card, were we not? And then De Zerbi gets yellow carded, but they didn't happen until the second half.
But this is the point, is that there were plenty of those, like,
I thought McAllister was booked about three times.
Yeah.
I just have a little thing, because Andy Taylor just looks so annoyed at having to be involved in that game. It was a bit like someone's gone, right, just get through this without any major controversy, will you, Anthony Taylor? And as it is, De Zerbi gets booked for protesting a penalty. Yeah. Protesting the Van Dijk penalty shells. And of course, yeah, they haul their subs like down by the neck and no one gets sent off. So yeah, unlucky. It's not possible to have a controversy-free game of football, because that's what football is.
What was it like in the ground? Did you realise what was going on? Did they look at anything in the ground?
You messaged me, didn't you, think about it? I'm sure
We all, as soon as it happened, we all screamed for a penalty, and for some reason Taylor lets it play on. So then we scream for the second one, and he finally points, and he looks like he's pointing to the spot, and we're like, great, well, we'll take either one of them, because they're both stone. And bear in mind, we're the other end of the grounds. This is miles away, but you could still see us be ragged. And the fume mostly was the fact that it looked like he'd went to his pocket and then just retracted his hand and not brought anything out. We didn't understand why it wasn't a yellow card, at least. And everyone there was stunned, because everyone was like, it's a goal scoring opportunity. But there was a lot of people in the ground who was like, yeah, but it's in the penalty, penalty box, isn't it? So actually it's only a yellow, where obviously no one had realised the double jeopardy. But the thing about Brighton is, as you go out onto the concourse, they have the replays going again, and you can just get a beer again before you go, and you can take it with you out the ground. And we were watching it back, and how they've deemed it a not a goal scoring opportunity. I've no idea. Even with him being tugged back, he can still reach that if he's sliding on the floor and kicking it. Like, you just can. So if you're thinking he's actually in stride, there's no way he's not getting to that ball and just putting it in past the goalkeeper. It's just such a simple finish. But from half time, I'm not too sure anyone really realised that it should have been a red. We were all fuming at it being a yellow. But yeah, once again, just
the yellow thing's mad. Yeah. Dan's kind of right there. I mean, how many times you see someone pull a little tug on a shirt outside of the penalty area as an attack's breaking, and they do not hesitate. They're yellow card they straight away. They love it. It's the easiest yellow card they get to give all day. And yet somehow, it's almost like he forgot that he hadn't given him a yellow card.
Yeah. Well, it happened. There's instance that every weekend in football, the Jota one last week is a little bit of that, you know, like that. Just get a little brush on someone, impedes their movement. It's an obvious. Everyone knows Jota. What you're doing, but it's not violent, etc., etc. We saw it in the West Ham Newcastle game. You know, this happens all the time. But you're right, he could not be more clearly hauled by his throat to the ground. There's no attempt to, you know, that's not a fair attempt.
That's
to win
a foul
the
in the NFL where you're allowed to tackle people with your arms. That is a foul in the NFL.
We didn't know. The other thing is that we didn't know why it was taking VAR so long. We didn't have a clue what they were going on about. It felt like they'd looked at that for like 2.5 minutes, and like no one had a clue why it was taking so long. Brighton had about 7 players around the referee, and I just was like, I was saying, just book one of them and make them all go away from you. I don't know why they're there. There's 2 clear penalties that could be given, but it felt like VAR. By the time he gave the penalty, the VAR came up on the screen only then checking the goal, because they'd taken so long.
There's a bit of offside involved, but there's a little bit of that at first, because the Brighton player ends up playing it back into the path. They checked that, because if that had been a Liverpool player, we might have had an issue there, but it comes cleaner. And then the red card thing kind of took over, which they deemed not to be worthy.
Did they look at it?
They, that was what they were talking about, yeah, because the penalty, as you say, was absolutely nailed on. They did spend time seeing whether he should have been sent off or not.
I'm honestly not that arsed that he doesn't get sent off in a wider footballing sense, because I don't really care for the lobby for red cards in football matches. We've had a load of, you know, we've had loads that we shouldn't have had and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not here for me pound of flesh of like, we've had yellow, red cards, so everyone else needs to get red cards. Whatever, football games are spoiled by losing players. But what's happened the last couple of weeks, it's what happens. This is the knock-on effect. We're now going to pore over every rule and make sure that all those rules are absolutely adhered to. So it actually makes referees have put this on themselves now by not bending the rules to it to be human. To go, hang on a second, it was a goal. Let's just stop a second. We've made a mistake here. Everyone just stop it and everyone just have a moment and a breathing and we'll sort this out. They go, right, no, this is the letter of the law. We're only allowed to act within these certain
frameworks. By the letter of the law, lads, when a goal's scored, you put one on the scoreboard.
Yeah, and it should be set. By the letter of the law, he should be sent off.
The mad thing is Mike Dean. The day before had him and Paul, who Paul Mason.
You mate Paul.
The one who does my head and on Twitter more than anyone else. Yeah, never thought I'd ever agree with him in my life.
Yeah, I get that.
I actually stood there and was like, oh my god, he's speaking sense.
What did Mace say?
Mace was just having a go at Mike Dean, because Mike Dean was saying, we can't change the rules and the law. We've got to stick by the law. The reason that footballers aren't doing what we're doing is because you don't understand the game. And you don't understand the rules, he said, which I'm here now pointing at a rule book of why Pascal Gross should have been sent off, and you haven't sent him off. Therefore, Mike Dean, your own officials don't have a fecking clue of the rule book,
which is horseshit, by the way, because you can learn rules, but you can't have played the game. You can't learn to have played the game at a professional level.
That was
you
what
know.
Mike Dean believed anyway.
Was good on it, to be fair. He spoke well on that.
It should just be. The other one, which is in the similar vein, is of course their penalty shout, which I think De Zerbi gets booked for, where they've got the iPad out and they're trying to zoom in, they're trying to make it wear the fat finger.
All I was thinking about your fucking grasses.
Yeah,
like, get off your iPad, your grass.
That's not a penalty, and you know, because it hits Van Dijk in the leg then hits his hand. It's like, you know, and for a start, I mean, it's not like his hand's up here; it's there. I get why Brighton would be in the moment, because we all get sucked into it all. Like Chloe said in the space of a sentence, it was 2 nailed on penalties. I was down the other end of the pitch. I was miles away. I couldn't see, because we do, because you feel, you know what feels like a penalty. You know, we all do it. We all do it, you know, to fight for the corner of our team. But It's not. You know it's not a penalty.
Do you know what? Done my head in about the Zerbi the most. He put his arms behind his back like, I'm not being aggressive, you dickhead. I'm like, you are though. Yeah. Look at you. You look like, Liam Gallagher.
Mm. Like a dog on a leash. South. Ryan Gravenberch. I think we all pretty much talked about him in our post match videos. And rightly so, because he's brilliant. Ryan Gravenberch. He's like the afterthought of our signings.
He's a breath of fresh air, though.
If we'd just signed him and not signed Szoboszlai, we'd all be like, oh my God, what have we bought here? But we bought Szoboszlai as well. He might be the greatest midfielder in waiting, and Gravenberch might be the second best midfielder.
It makes me worry that we can't get three of them in the right positions, though. And I was saying this to you last night, because when you've got McAllister and you've got Gravenberch and you've got Szoboszlai, I wouldn't play a DM either. Like, and that's what Klopp's fallen into. Like, why? And it does. And this is why I'm reticent to write McAllister off. Is I might see a world where he doesn't, and he just uses McAllister there because he's got Gravenberch, because he's got Jones, because he's got Szoboszlai and Harvey Elliott, and he must be sorely tempted to go, those were my plans. But I'm going to have to change them.
Well,
because I didn't think I was going to get Gravenberch at the end of the window.
Well, Szoboszlai wasn't the plan either, was it? But McAllister was quite clearly plan A. Fabinho, Henderson, rotating in the six. McAllister can come replace Thiago, and then we're going to go and get Mason Mount, or we might get Kefren Teram, or we might get whatever. And all of a sudden we can get Szoboszlai. It's like, fuck. And he's become so... And you're right, circumstances happen in football that move things on. And this is not real football, but I've had this happen in, like... It's like Champ Man. You can live alternate universes.
We all understand that that's exactly the same.
San Christian Vieri, 5-5, scored for me, then the game crashed, and I rebooted it, reloaded it, didn't score a single goal for me all season, because that's just how footy works. Sometimes it's an example from a computer game, but yeah, well, why would I have reset it when he scored 5-5?
Because you lost an important game.
No, it was my very, very aging PC playing a 102. But the point on this is you're right, McAllister, he'll be fine, but Gravenberch, by the time we get to a position where either Endo's up to speed or we've signed another number six, Gravenberch and Szoboszlai could be the two best eights in the country, and he could be nowhere near.
And that's
them.
It. Like, we might be just bedding McAllister in for the long term, mightn't we? You know.
Now that you've said it, I'm all for it.
If you can get it working, my word, isn't that more fun than having a six?
Yeah.
Sixes are rubbish. Six is the most boring position on the field now. Isn't he? Genuinely, like, you know what I mean?
But massive, aren't
they? But 100 odd million pound for six is
But when you've got one, they win your leagues.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, you know what I mean? But Arsenal spent 100 million pound.
That's why.
But they didn't play him in the fucking six. They played him in the eight.
Love it, Rodgers, man. He's the biggest Mr. Titty you've got.
He's sure.
You know what
I mean? Biggest Mr. Titty City you've got. Like, yeah, absolutely. You're true. You're very true. We had a super chat in from earlier, which I didn't get a chance to read because I was hoping we'd come to the topic, but it sat there for ages. I want to read it anyway. Also from the detective, who said we can challenge for the title but need luck with injuries. We saw how suspensions and injuries impacted us at the weekend without options from the bench. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's totally true on that one. And Gravenberch, Chloe, was our big hit, and it's such a shame because I agree, and I've seen a lot of people saying that, like, you know, the injuries have come back to bite us. We almost managed it perfectly. You know, we came from a goal down, our own mistake. We get ourselves back into the game. Gravenberch comes on, changes the dynamic of the midfield, and he's 6 inches away from giving us a 3-1 lead, which might have been the game done and dusted.
Yeah, he's such a silky footballer. Unbelievable. And I don't want to say he reminds me of Lallana, but I remember Lallana was receiving it on his back foot and turning it, and that's Gravenberch all over again. And I loved Lallana, and if he could have stayed fit more than he was, then I reckon he'd be an unbelievable for Liverpool. If Gravenberch can stay fit, he's got the physicality there as well. He looks a unit. He's great at carrying the ball. He pushes people off the ball. And for someone that tall, his first touch shouldn't be that good. His weight of receiving a ball and switching and moving so easily in the other direction shouldn't be, his centre of gravity shouldn't be that good, but he is, and him in and around the area was really good. He set up a couple of chances out wide where I think Mo maybe took a couple of too many touches, but he scores two on the day, so who cares, you know, not much more he can do. But he was just, as soon as he came on, you went, that's what we need. Just someone who'll shrug some off a ball, because it felt like in the first half we were getting a bit too bullied. He came on and he was struggling people off the ball. He was winning the ball. He was winning 50-50s. And then he was doing the stuff where you thought, wow. Like, what a footballer he is. I cannot wait to see more of him. I don't want to say he's unlucky because he should just score, yeah. But for his benefit, I will say he's unlucky. And he should have scored, but honestly, he was a breath of fresh air. He was incredible when he came on. He tilted that game in our favour because you had someone who'd win the ball back for you. Robertson got more in the game because of how good Gravenberch was playing as well. I genuinely cannot wait to see more of Ryan Gravenberch.
That miss, Dan, it's worth reminding ourselves that that is our two number eights crossing the ball for one another from the byline. I don't recall many instances where Jordan Henderson did that for Gini Wijnaldum.
No. It's funny that
I remember Trent doing it to Robbo more often.
I said exactly the same thing this morning on our final word. They're on the 6 yard box, in the 6 yard box essentially, both of them for all intents and purposes, and it's a switch from one post to the back one, and Gravenberch is arriving. That's unheard of from a Liverpool perspective. That's just ridiculous, and it's a sign of, I suppose, how confident they are, how attack-minded both of them are, of course, and sort of the instinctive nature of Ryan Gravenberch to get in there and try and get on the end of something. We've seen it in the week. Obviously, he's the one following up on a potential mistake. He's the one who senses, tell you what, if I go, there's a chance here. He spills that and he scores. And you don't get that in many midfielders. You know, there's a certain ones, I mean, Frank Lampard, I hate to bring him up, but he was brilliant with that type of stuff, wasn't he? He was always that guy. He racked up numbers for doing it. And Gravenberch looks like he's got a little bit of that in as well as all the other stuff that he's got, because, again, another really impactful performance. Chloe's absolutely right the way she describes him, but it's the way he draws fouls as well. He just wins fouls for fun. I think he's brilliant. I really, really do. And he is quite unfortunate with the finish for my money. I think he probably connects too well with it. We spoke yesterday, you want studs, you want, like, you know, real
a little something
scuff,
like a shin,
because then that just rolls in, doesn't it? You need him to scuff that, and he connects with it relatively strongly, which obviously sends it higher than you'd like. But yeah, another massive step in the right direction, and I think we're not too far removed now from just going, you know what, in you go, lad, because you've shown me enough already.
Was anyone surprised that he didn't start? Because massively. I genuinely thought he'd start. Harvey Elliott was the last name in my
that
mind,
was
just off, because he played
he was
so
our third
much.
Choice.
Gravenberch makes himself available so much. In the first half, I think you mentioned Szoboszlai not really getting involved earlier. I think he had like 9 touches by the 40-minute mark, and that's nowhere near enough. And him and Elliot weren't dovetailing that well. And then when Gravenberch comes on, he's another one. And he'll go into tight spaces and he'll say, do you know what? I know I've got a couple of lads around me, but give me the ball, watch what I'll
do. But Szoboszlai's on his side of the pitch as well.
Yeah, that switch helps massively, of course it does, yeah. But the fact, like I say, Gravenberch and Szoboszlai at that point are then going, yeah, give it to me. And they're both, the midfielders can do that with one of them. They can go and track one, they can't do it with both. So in Gravenberch and Szoboszlai, you've got two headaches and you're going, I don't know where to go here. So all of a sudden, both of them are getting on the ball a hell of a lot more.
And it was that, you know, we talked about the improvement in McAllister's performance. You had three lads in the middle of the park. All of a sudden, you were taking the ball on the turn, leaving their midfield for dead. And all of a sudden, the pitches opened up in front of us. Just so promising.
He looks like, I'm sort of repeating a little bit of what these guys have said, but when he takes that on the ball, he reminds me of Thiago, because Thiago does them, you know what I mean? Just doesn't look like him. But the one that I really love is when he's got a man in front of him, and he just decides, I'm going to whip this round you and run you, lad. And that's new to me. We haven't had a midfielder that's done that for ages. Oxlade-Chamberlain did it for a small window of time. But like, just someone who goes, I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm faster, and I'm going to get round you, and the entire pitch is going to change because of doing this.
Yeah.
That is so brave and different to what I've seen.
It goes back to the same, complete midfielders in potential. You know, they're not, neither Szoboszlai nor Gravenberch are the finished article yet, which is what's almost the most exciting thing about them, is that they've only been under Jürgen Klopp's wing for a couple of months. Imagine in a year's time or two years.
We were
years
talking
time.
Yesterday about the age of our midfield, weren't we? Yeah. If you think of like Harvey and Szoboszlai and Kurt Jones, McAllister's the oldest at, what, 24 or 25? Mm-hmm. You know, and then Bacetic, and like, it's ridiculous. They're basically all 21, 22. We could have this midfield for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we might not see the best for two or three. Yeah.
The problem is that you mentioned earlier is, I now want to see Gravenberch week in, week out, but I also want to see McAllister and Szoboszlai, so what the hell do we do?
But this is the best problem to have. We've just come from a world where we didn't have any midfielders. They were all injury prone. You know, we joked 2-3 weeks ago that Szoboszlai and McAllister had already played more minutes than Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby did all of last season. Well, there you go. You know, these are the good problems to have. And to that point, you know, that was a midfield that didn't have Curtis Jones available to it, still didn't have Thiago. We were able to put out good lads onto the pitch. What actually undid us was not having Gakpo and Jota.
Going back to that super chat, it wasn't just the injuries; it was a stupid fucking red card that shouldn't have been given.
Yeah, absolutely.
We win that game without one.
With just one of them.
Well, maybe not from a Liverpool point of view. Yes, from a Liverpool point of view, in terms of what that can do in terms of changing the dynamic and the fresh ideas and the fresh legs, of course, because it did look like the front line in particular ran out a little bit of that towards the end. But I've mentioned it a few times now. Brighton look over the touchline and go, how is Jota Stoke Gakpo coming on now? Another problem to have, another headache, a different type of player as well, because Diaz has a chance around the 70 minute mark, and Luis Diaz is brilliant.
Is that the left footed one? Or was that
and he's brilliant. I really like him, obviously, and he's very good, but you just think if that falls to Jota being that guy, different story.
Yeah, definitely. Just slightly linking into it, we had another super chat from Edward Joseph 1808 with 1,000 squiggles, which, given that it's come through as red, I can only imagine is loads, so thank you so much. The scrutiny of cards we received against Spurs is having more of an impact on refereeing than the shambled VAR incidents. Better or worse, only time will tell. Up the Reds. I hate it when Liverpool have to be at like the forefront of all these kind of things. I'm kind of proud in a weird way that we are the ones who stand up, but you never know whether it positively impacts us down the line or whether it leads to the referees being bigger. And I honestly think this is why Jürgen Klopp's been so nice. You know, it's even like he goes over to the Zerbi and tries to calm the Zerbi down when he's kicking off with the fourth official. I think someone's had a word with Jürgen and gone, you're going to have to be better. These lads are it's hard because they're morons and they're making your life more difficult, but it's not you. What you're doing is not working. So try and be like an advocate for referees for the change and see if that actually works in our favour.
I think Edward's spot on there, because you think about all the talk in the week and how many times I've turned on the telly and Sky Sports News or whatever, or YouTube or whatever, and all I've heard is someone saying, like, you know, red card should be a last resort. You want to keep, the professionals are all saying, you want to keep the 11 players, let them sort out. All of a sudden, lad should have got sent off against us at the weekend and doesn't get a sent off because the referees have been listening to that all week. How everybody in the world wants to keep the players on the pitch.
But honestly, the rules are fucking irrelevant.
And it just swings back and forth like that. For
the rules are like they're fallback in it, because ultimately we want referees to actually have a bit of humanity to them. But when they do, we go, well, why aren't you enforcing the rules? And when they've just enforced the rules of the humanity, we go, why have you enforced those? Not, they ultimately can't win. But, you know, at least they're
just be better.
And if it can benefit Liverpool for a change, that'd be absolutely lovely.
Thank you for the gifted subscription.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that as well, mate. I just want to talk about the general gist on this one, because obviously 2-2 is not a result that we were all looking for, Dan. I think we were all looking for a bit more positivity. You go ahead, of course it's disappointing when you concede the last goal in a draw. The draw always feels a worse point than the other way round. But I was looking at, just as a headline thing, in terms of the statistics from this time around. So ultimately, we have 54% possession in this one. We have the same amount of shots, but one more shot on target, four to three. We play more passes and our pass accuracy is fractionally better, which is kind of irrelevant. The game in the league there last season, the 3-0, we have 39% possession. They have 16 shots to our 6, 9 to our 2 on target. They played like 230 more passes than us in the game. Our pass accuracy is where. This is where it's relevant, I think, that yes, a draw isn't the thing that propels Liverpool to top of the league and really definitively in a title race. But actually, I think you can only really benchmark against last season, because we were fucking rubbish last season, and I don't think it's fair to benchmark this team against the team that went the season before or the seasons before that. So in that regard, actually going to Brighton and not being trounced, and knowing that we actually could have won it, even though we could have lost it, I think is a marked improvement.
It's a marked improvement, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, it's definitely a step in the right direction, and as you say, kind of a nod towards the new Liverpool 2.0, if you like, the one Jürgen Klopp has spoken very fondly of. And I read a stat last night, actually. I think that we're the first team to go there under De Zerbi and have more possession and a higher XG, which is fascinating. Didn't feel like that in sort of the weight of the game, but that's good.
And that's in 50 games. That was just
That's good. That's really, obviously really positive. I fell into the trap quite a lot, and what you just touched upon there in terms of, like, sort of comparing it in my own mind to the really successful sides we've had under Jürgen Klopp. And ones that were able to win ugly and sort of get through, because at times yesterday that was ugly and we were sort of flying by the seat of our pants a little bit and they were in the ascendancy. But Liverpool sides of previous ilks, not the one last year, have been able to get through that. But you're right, essentially. All you can do is compare it to what it was last year, and it was miles better. Like the midfield actually could run. We could put passes together. We could put passages of football together that represented and looked like what we'd come to expect from Liverpool. So it was good, and it was a decent point. And I hope I think my sort of disappointment with the result comes in the fact that we're obviously going into the last 10 minutes or so ahead and we don't win the game. Yeah. That's frustrating. But I've also coupled it in with my frustrations from the Spurs game. And it's combined to make this whole shit pie of my mood, essentially. That's disappointing. And I'm sure in the fullness of time, we'll look back and go, that was a bit silly of me, wasn't it? Because that's a good point and Spurs was what it was. But right now, I'm a bit like, that's annoying.
The way in which we concede the second goal, the defending's absolutely awful, by the way, from that set piece, which doesn't help at all. Especially when you have to watch it over and over and over again on a screen. But it most defo is the Spurs and the way you feel like you've been robbed. And actually, with those 3 points, we could be top of the table. Yeah. It is also, I mean, Arsenal did us a massive favour in my eyes, because I'd rather be chasing Arsenal down than Manchester City, that is for sure. But, and look, Arsenal could run away with the league, who knows. But the thing is when a massive decision like that goes against you and you've lost the league by a point twice already in the past, and you know that even though Manchester City don't seem like that same Manchester City, they've still got Erling Haaland and when Rodri comes back and they've still got De Bruyne to come back and they're still flying without those players, really.
Well, Arsenal were top for how much of last season.
Exactly.
And we were talking about, oh, God, if they win it when City are having a bad season, then City put 89 points on the board and won the treble.
It's not the start of the season where City won the league last season.
And that's the thing. The problem is those seasons you felt like a draw had lost you the league, and because you know what you're up against, it feels like a draw can lose you the league, when in actual fact we're 3 points off the top and we've played the likes of Newcastle, Brighton, you know, we've played some really Tottenham, tough sides, Spurs, Chelsea.
Five really tough away games for us so far, isn't there? But it depends where your expectations are. Like, I hope and think that Liverpool can challenge this season. I do not expect Liverpool to win the league this season. Jürgen Klopp said it himself, this is year one of this new team. When you've got a new team, there are going to be inconsistencies, there are going to be bumps along the road that you have to overcome. It would be great if those bumps along the road, like has happened the last 2 weeks, doesn't mean we fall 6 to 12 points behind. You know, it does seem like everybody else is having the bumps in the road, and that may play into our favour later down the line. But I think if you asked any Liverpool fan honestly before the season started, are we going to win the league, do you expect us to win the league, they're not going to be many
of them. You've just got to look, and this is my point, look for improvement right now. Mm. Everything else will come. I had the question in the fan interactive last night after the match, and it was, what's a good season? If we don't win the league, do we have to win one of the Europa League? And I was like, it's October. Just enjoy the football and we'll see what comes of it. I've got a sneaky suspicion we're good, but you know that needs to be borne out by what follows and what everyone else does as well, which we're going to discuss more of on the Bias Football Podcast this week. Short break. When we return, we're going to be taking stock of the season so far and see if we can put answers to some questions that we had when the season kicked off. Back in a sec.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, yes, welcome back to the Red Men Originals podcast. We've obviously covered Brighton already, so we're going to move things on to just where we're at. We know it's the international break. It's a couple of weeks away from Liverpool playing footy, which I'm just gutted about. I'm really enjoying it. I really kind of wanted that feeling of positives, just that one more win. The dopamine hit would have been great. But I think it's a decent time for us to take stock before we have another spell and then have yet another international break in November and probably do exactly the same thing. Chris, ultimately, so far, so good. Really, I guess, you know, Chloe and Dan are right. It's hard not to feel a little bit of a kick in the teeth because we've just come off the back of the Spurs game and the Brighton game, which we've taken a point from two of those. I don't think any one of us is necessarily pointing at the Union Saint-Gilloise as this great, you know, turning point. And even though we got 3 points in that one, but it looks we seem pretty nicely staged.
Yeah, it feels like taking the USG game out of it, it feels like we've kind of limped into the international break, and I don't think that's really a fair reflection of what happened. You know, the Tottenham game is just an absolute one-off. The Brighton game, I think everyone's got a few misgivings about, but ultimately when you compare it to last season as you did before, then, you know, it is a marked improvement. So I'm really still excited for the rest of the season. I'm really hopeful that we're going to get better and we're going to improve because, you know, I'm watching Liverpool a long time, as everybody here has, of course, but like when you just throw in a brand new midfield into a team, it does take time. And unfortunately, that's the one thing that we seem to be getting less and less of as we continue to watch football through the years. There's just the 24/7 news cycle, the YouTube shows, the podcasts and everything else just means everything just needs to be immediate. Yes. And it needs to have happened yesterday. And there's no time for sitting and watching something grow and enjoying the ride. And yeah, that's all part and parcel of being a football fan, isn't it? Like, Jürgen Klopp is one of the best managers that Liverpool have ever had. But like, it didn't happen overnight. It took time to get there. We saw different iterations, even of Jürgen's side, before we got to Premier League winners, or before we got to European Cup winners and Premier League winners. You know, we saw this swashbuckling Liverpool side and had to change it. So this is Liverpool 2.0 under Jürgen Klopp, but it's probably not going to be the finished 2.0. You know, there's going to be a 2.1 or a 2.2 before we get to the finished version.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, talking about how it's working and what might change over the next few months. That's the stuff that tactically interests me. It's why I still like football now. Because if I was watching the same game over and over forever, if I was a Pep Guardiola fan, I'd get bored. Yeah. I like to see things change and move on.
I think that's really, really interesting, because the big conversation we've had all summer is, what are Liverpool going to do? Our understanding of this Liverpool has had to be refreshed, and I totally agree. I'm really enjoying that. I'm enjoying not having the answers or having new, you know, and different levels of expectation comes. It's been quite a relief. I don't know about anyone else, but I mentioned about the Europa League, is that you're good enough. We're good enough to win every game in that. But that means we don't necessarily need to go sort of flat out, and it's also not on a knife edge, because ultimately it'll be annoying if we were to lose a game, but we will just go and win the others. If Liverpool ever want to win a Europa League game, they'll put the strongest team out and they'll fucking walk it. But the point is that we've rotated massively already, and it's all ticking along, so I'm enjoying the ride of it all. I want to know from you guys, though, and anyone watching at home wants to dive in on this one as well, what have we learned about this team that maybe we didn't know in June? Whether that could be like tactically.
It's not great for podcast listeners, right? But big art.
Mentality's
back. Yeah. That's the big thing for me, actually, to be honest with you, because that was the thing that I was most tactically, you know, miles off it last season. Obviously, legs fell off a lot of players, already mentioned, but it felt to me, and I said it countless times on podcasts last year, that in the face of adversity, we just crumbled. time and time again last season. Went 1-0 down in games, you know, whatever it may be. Things weren't going our way and we had no answer. To all too often, maybe once or twice, people will point to certain games. Of course they will. I say, what about that? But generally speaking, what had sort of stood us in such good stead and set us apart from the rest of the Football League was the fact that it didn't matter the circumstances, it didn't matter how deep we went into games, we would find a way. And that evaporated last season. But already this season, even though it was a small sample size, and yes, we're technically better, we've got better energy in the midfield, etc., etc. The attacking line, the attacking options are just scandalously good, like the best in Europe, in my opinion. So that's great. That firepower is brilliant. But more importantly than anything for me is in the face of adversity, and we've seen it a lot already this season. We've gone 1-0 down, I think it's 5 times now, and we're constantly at a numerical disadvantage, it feels like. But it hasn't mattered. Yeah, granted, you know, we don't end up getting the result we probably deserve in the Tottenham game especially, but we're showing heart, we're showing fight, we're showing character, and we've got leaders now, having lost two of our most famous leaders in the way in the summer, we've got leaders in the squad now that will stand up to be counted and take it personally when shit's going wrong.
Yeah.
And I said it about Szoboszlai in the game earlier on this season, and we went down to 10 and he was everywhere, man possessed.
Yeah.
And it was like, I've said again, apologies for repeating myself, he took offence to the fact that Liverpool might not win a game, and he went, no, not while I'm here, mate, it's not happening. And I loved that. So that's the biggest plus for me. And yeah, the good football and the quality will shine through, and that's great. But more than anything, like I say, is the fact that we've now got the heart back, that desire and that mentality, because that's what underpins Jurgen Klopp's football, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think to take that further, Chloe, obviously Dan mentions the amount of times we've gone down a man or two men. If it was the Liverpool from last season, I think they'd have gone, oh, well, typical, we're cursed, or it's a hoodoo against us, or this is just not
us.
Yeah, exactly. And the best thing about Jurgen Klopp's teams previously, they've been narrative busters. I've watched, you know, we've had another decade plus of watching Liverpool sides than you have, but of Liverpool doing that thing where they go, oh God, it's just not our day, is it? Oh, well, never mind. And that's not typified Jürgen's approach, and that's been the best thing for me anyway about seeing these new lads, is that again, I'm just expanding on what Dan said, but they don't feel sorry for themselves. They're prepared to say, nah, fuck it, actually, we love a bit of adversity, we'll work even harder in it.
Yeah, they leave everything on the pitch, which is something I couldn't say last season, or at least it did not feel like. It feels like they've bought absolutely into what Jürgen Klopp wants of them. They've gelled so quickly already. I mean, Trent and Sobby being best mates already is a bit mad. I love the fact that I'm looking at these players and I can't name you starting 11 because I want to see Curtis Jones, but then I want to see Gravenberch, but I want to see McAllister, but I might want to see Darwin Nunes, but I also might want to see Jota. Like, there are so many places where I'm like, if you just swapped a couple of them in the lineup, I'd be sound. And you could do it over and over again with different variations, and every single time I think to myself, we can go on and win this game no matter who we're up against. I love the fact that the mentality is back. I love the fact that at the start of the season, I didn't expect us to be in a title challenge or anything. I just expected a group of lads to really understand the system and start getting to know each other. And, you know, challenge for top four is where I expected Liverpool to be. And at this moment in time, we're 3 points off top, and the top is Spurs. It's not Manchester United, Manchester City, not Manchester
United. Definitely
not United.
It's
definitely not.
Won't be for a long time either.
But it's not Manchester City, and it makes it even more interesting because I also look around the league and I'm like, well, they can actually take points off Manchester City this season, and it's felt like no one could take points unless you were Palace or Wolves off Manchester City in recent years. But I go around the league and I'm like, maybe them, and maybe them, and maybe them. And I think we've started stronger than I thought we would, and I can buy into every single part of this team. That is the big difference. There is not a single player who I don't love. I absolutely love everyone in this squad. I love them. I love the fact that the potential is outrageous for the squad. And also, it's a case of the likes of the players who were unreal feel like they've... Alisson Becker feels like he's even gotten better. Don't know how. Mo Salah, who we all thought might be the assist there, might have a different version of himself, is still Mo Salah. Darwin Nunes has gotten better, which we all want to see and we all believed he could, but I like what he's producing. I'm seeing Diaz again. I'm seeing a midfield that looks like they can create for days and score goals. It is just very exciting. And I'm a bit sad that I don't get to see the Reds play, because last season, every international break, I was like, thank God.
Yeah,
I was like, wow. But this season, I can't get enough of the Reds, and that's the main point.
Yeah, just to echo, well, I echo everything that everybody's already said, but I also would like to add on that, like, it looks like Jürgen loves these lads, and he looks reinvigorated by them, and that's really good for us as fans as well.
Absolutely. Let's go sort of through the positions then. Front line, Chris, are we any clearer as to what our best front three is?
No, I don't think I am, to be honest. I think, you know, we've used the term horses for courses a lot this season, and I still think it's going to be a little bit like that. I think if I had to sort of pick, I'd say Nunes is your home striker at the moment, but he's got a chance of being more than that. If Nunes starts to put down goals, Nunes will be the number nine. I don't really feel like that's the case with Gakpo, which is a bit weird. Doesn't really make any sense that, but I think Jota and Cody are there as, yeah, they're doing a job at the moment, and they're going to be the ones where we go into tough games and you might want a little bit more. That's why I think it was really difficult for us at the weekend against Brighton, because Nunes wouldn't have started that game, in my opinion, had one of those two been available for it. Diaz is starting to put numbers down, as Chloe mentioned before, and looking like an absolute player. Mo's Mo and will be Mo until he decides not to be Mo at Liverpool anymore. So yeah, it's just a great front five or something at the moment, isn't it?
The only issue I have is, I think there's not full gel across any three. I don't think there's a perfect three for us yet. I think Nunes and Salah are a great partnership, and is evidenced by the fact that Nunes has broken a record, hasn't he, for the most assists for a single player. The Jota and Gakpo, I think, work best together because of the nature of those two, how Jota plays that role. I think Jota likes to get close to someone and kind of do bits and pieces off them. Nunes, I think, follows Salah around almost and tries to work with Salah.
Hey, pass to me, mate.
Well, yeah, but you know, but it's working.
I'm open.
But I'm enjoying both of those sorts of partnerships. I don't think we've seen enough of the Gakpo Jota one, because I don't think Gakpo's form has been great and how he's been used at the start of the season. Diaz is such an odd one because he scored in big moments for us. He should have four goals to his name, you know, we know that now. And that'll make this an even trickier conversation to have. I think when Nunes and Salah play, I think Diaz ends up really isolated, and I think Jota ends up isolated in the way when those two play together. So I'm not 100% the answer. Diaz, I think, start because he's just got pace and he can hold his own on his own a bit. I think Jota needs a lot more other things around him to make that work a little bit more. But I mean, these are good problems to have. I'm just looking at the numbers so far. So Salah in 10 appearances has got 6 goals and 4 assists. So yeah, a goal or an assist every game for Mo Salah on average.
Should be on 11.
It should be more. He should literally have a goal or an assist in every game that he's played in this season.
And he would have had 2 penalties. They'd spread them out a bit.
Darwin Nunes has got 4 goals and 3 assists in his 10 appearances so far. I mean, and that's what's
is
really
that
good
as well, not just this. That's just
appearances, yeah. So actually, in terms of his overall minutes, he's played like 300 minutes, nearly less than Salah, and got seven goals and assists combined. Jota's got 4 goals, no assists. Diaz has got 3/4 goals, no assists. Gakpo's got 3 goals, no assists so far. Gravenberch is up there, the other one who's got 3 combined, a goal and 2 assists. That should be 2 goals and 2 assists. So anyway, in terms of the strikers, Chloe, it feels like they're all Salah.
The rest, I think, given Gravenberch is one's a bit harsh.
But they're all ticking along really nicely is the point on this. We're managing to just about balance it, but no, I don't think there's a front three that's emerging. Listen, that might not happen, and that might not actually be a bad thing.
No, it's like you said, it's a headache that Jürgen Klopp will actually enjoy. And like you mentioned, you know, for Brighton, not having Jota or Gakpo on the bench was actually massively infuriating, because with 20 to go, if, like you said, Nunes coming on, we'd be sat there thinking, oh, good luck, Brighton. but sadly, he faded out of the game, you know. And also, he wasn't fit, was he, the other day? So we might have actually pushed him a bit too far in that game. But the thing that, for me, I'm just in love with Darwin Núñez at this moment in time. I just think his all-round play has gotten so much better. His hold-up play is ridiculous. Like, the reason I'd always stick with Cody Gakpo was because he's your safest option. If he was like the Bobby Firmino regeneration. But the way he'd protect the ball, he'd go short and he'd win the ball. Now, with Darwin Núñez will just shrug someone off and protect that ball and set it away and go on his bike. I absolutely adore seeing him at the moment in time. I think he's always, he's more refined but still chaotic, and that's what I like. He scores some absolutely unbelievable goals but misses some absolute unbelievable sitters. It's mad, you don't know what you're going to get, but he's absolute entertainment. And like you mentioned, him and Salah's link-up's brilliant. As for that left-hand side, I think Diaz has done well. I don't think he's made it his own. But at the same time, him and Jota are just two very, very different players on that left wing. And I think maybe Diaz fits it slightly more. But like you mentioned, I don't think there's an out-and-out like three at the top. You could rotate them every single game, and that's probably what Jürgen will do. But I would like to see more of Darwin Núñez and Mo Salah starting together, because I do think you can't pay 80 million on a lad and then him not be a number one striker for Liverpool. And I think he will become good. I think he's already a really good player. But I think with him just getting more and more confidence, that is what is going to unlock Darwin Núñez from Benfica, is giving him more confidence in racking up the goals, and in believing himself a bit more.
Just adding on to what Chloe was saying there, I think it's important to recognise as well that he's not been fucked around on the left this time. Like, I think that's having an impact on his game for the better. You know, he's not having to go there and do something different. He's able to train week in, week out on what he's got to do to get better as a number nine at Liverpool Football Club. So I think, you know, we can look back at last season and go, he did a job there at times and stuff like that, but I think it did hinder his development as a number nine for us.
Yeah, no, I completely agree on that one. I think it's all just good. I mean, this is not a bunch of crap footballers, you know, when one of them might come in and score a goal. And I know I've ended up slagging Divock Origi a lot, but almost accidentally of late, but Origi was a lad who could score a goal, but he needed to be played in a very similar certain way. And then he got pushed out wide, and you knew that's like the beginning of the end. That's where, you know, we're just getting him on the pitch as an extra body. Minamino was not a fit. He was just an extra body to kind of make up the numbers. The tail end of Daniel Sturridge was a bit similar as well. There's just a bunch of lads who all fit and they all bring something a little bit different. But what they're all actually bringing is goals. And that's where we can clamour for Doak all we want, but Doak isn't there just yet, which is great. The 16-year-old lad is not required. We're not going, 16-year-old boy, go and win in vital games of football for us. No, continue development, continue to be a really promising youngster, and hopefully continue to take those steps further forward. So yeah, very encouraging, but it will be interesting to see whether there does come a point where we're like, this is the new front three, or is it just this attacking squad we've got instead. The midfield, so in part one we did a lot on the Endo McAllister sort of conundrum, so I don't want to tread too much over that again, but
I don't think I've got it in me again.
No, I do feel though, I went and checked the final of the Copa Libertadores, Dan, is on the 4th of November.
Talk about this yesterday, me and Chris.
And I have this little sneaking suspicion that's just what we're waiting for before Andre gets announced, because Endo could be decent for us, and look, we might have loads of boss eights, but just have more. You know, like, Thiago's not going to be a Liverpool player for much longer by the looks of it. You know, he's got another injury setback there. I think there's a world where you go and get someone like Andre and you look to move Thiago on, or you release Thiago, he's only got half a season left on his contract. You won't really want to do that, and I would love to have Thiago available as a squad member for us, but we don't need a Thiago now. We need someone who can naturally play in the six, so that gives us someone a bit more like Thiago, i.e. Alexis McAllister, to go be free and play the job he wants to do.
Yeah, 100%. And it does feel a little bit like we are waiting for that final, like you say, to move again on Andre. I certainly hope that's the case, because I think in terms of squads, I think that's all we're missing now. I take your point entirely early on Endo. He is the backup, the stopgap. He's a stopgap backup, if there ever was such a thing, because he's just around for certain games. It looks like, anyway, like, I wasn't entirely sure when we first signed him. It felt like maybe we would call upon him for these big away days, but it's looking increasingly likely that's not going to be the case. We are going to stick with McAllister, which is fine. You know, it is what it is, but that can't be the long-term solution. We have to go out and solve the problem, which we didn't do in the summer, because here where we are now. And I think Andre is the answer to that. I really do. I think the type of DM he is really fascinating as well, because he's not, to come back to it, he's not a destroyer. He's got so much more to his game. He's quite Thiago-esque, actually, in the way he plays the role, but his positioning. He is tough in the tackle as well. He'll give you all that sort of stuff. He's almost like what we probably all love McAllister to be right now,
yeah.
Because he's got all the finesse, he's got all the class with the ball at his feet, and he can make things happen. But he's also got that little bit of gnarl about him, that little bit like, that's my ball, don't you dare have any. You can't have that ball, that's mine. Andre brings all that to the party. So it's almost like, if we do it in January, we'll be saying to McAllister, thanks for doing this for us a bit. Now, you're now part of that eight rotation. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, that competition for places is seriously tough. So go and win your shirt in there, mate. Best of luck. Great. But with Andre, it's almost like a nice precursor, the way McAllister's doing it, because the style and what we're doing in terms of system won't change too much. Mm-hmm. We'll just get a better version of that in there, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. That's not to say it's going to happen, but I was just thinking about it the other day. Like, I wonder why we've not seen more movement on that. And yeah, the final of the Copa Libertadores, which he'll be a big part of for Fluminense, doesn't take place for another.
The interesting thing for me and Dan were talking about this the other day. Fluminense do this like relationism tactics. Have you seen anything about it? It's massive at the moment, and I'm sure Pep Linders is all over this type of stuff. And it's less about the formation, and it's more about where you are in relation to everybody else on the pitch, and it's about finding space and all this type of stuff. And it's almost like total football, basically just reinvented for the modern age, using, you know, algorithms and shit like that to be able to work out where they are. So I'm actually planning a deep dive at some point with Josh on this whole thing, and Andre's almost the best test case for it, because like, what does he do in that midfield, and where does he move, and all this type of stuff if we were to do that. But I think everybody's sort of moving towards these types of football tactics anyway, which is quite interesting. So, and we've seen this relationism in terms of our old front three for it, you know, for ages, you know, how they dovetail with each other, and you just use a different word to describe it at times. But we've seen more of Kurt Jones and Szoboszlai swapping places in certain situations this season than I think we've ever seen. And, you know, we use parts of it where Trent is and when he moves into the centre-back line and all this type of stuff. So the Andre stuff feels like, if Liverpool are moving that way, which I feel I've seen part of that tactics in Liverpool's formation, then getting a lad who literally plays at the club that are at the cutting edge of this might be a really good decision. And that's not even considering how good a footballer he is.
It's like that thing if we haven't seen the full plan yet, because the plan was undercut by the Saudi Pro League coming in and taking our two defensive midfielders. For what they taking, Liverpool chose to sell the two defensive midfielders.
It was sped up.
Yeah, absolutely. Speed the process up. We just don't know, because I was thinking this when we were talking about Szoboszlai, and I said this at the end of last season. I felt that Jordan Henderson was doing a place card performance. Like, he's been told, here's roughly the shape of what this role looks like. You're there. Can you just go and try your best to do a bit of this? And he's going, yeah, absolutely. And I was like, well, when we see what we've bought for that, we'll see what it's meant to look like. And then you see Szoboszlai and you go, fuck me, okay, sound. And we actually don't know really what our six is meant to look like until we get someone who's been expressly bought with that role in mind. And whether it's Andrew or not, I don't know, but it's there's certainly an interesting thing. I just want to touch upon a comment, actually, because I've seen a few people mention this. And people have talked about, I've seen people reference Chloe Klopp's favouritism, and that somehow he's got a favouritism for McAllister over Endo, and that's why Endo's not playing. Not, you're shaking your head.
He wouldn't have brought him here if no one had Endo on their list, by the way, guys. I'd never heard of the lad in my life. He was not on anyone's list, but Jürgen Klopp had wanted him years ago, which already proves that he liked him. But then to also go totally against the gradient of what Liverpool have done. We just mentioned Andre there, is he not 20? This lad is 30 years of age, and Liverpool have gone and pulled him and said, look, we need someone to fill that gap, and we want you. he seems like a Jurgen Klopp player. He seems humble, down to earth, hard working, all of the above. Go and look at the way Jurgen Klopp brought him in, and he was like, you know, I wanted you back then. I've got, you know, he speaks highly of him. It's, I don't think it's that at all. I do just think he believes McAllister is the better player, which he is.
I think it's really simple. I think he does have favourites. I think he favours Alisson Becker over Cleven Kelleher. Oh, I don't think there's any problem with that when you're a football manager.
Yeah.
Your favourites are generally the guys that are better.
But I think
the ones in the best line.
But this is the point. Yeah, I think favouritism in this instance is being used as like somehow he's choosing to play a worse player. And I don't think that's the case. I think he prioritises lads who are humble, hardworking, determined, but also happen to be really good at football on top of that. And if you haven't got the good at football, he'll preference the guys who are hardworking over guys who are really good at football but not hardworking. But actually, Liverpool are in a weird position where most of our lads are both.
Yeah.
So it comes down to fine margins. And you work that hard in training all through the week, but you're technically more proficient. He'll
also, like you mentioned earlier, or you, that's at that time we signed Endo, we didn't think we were getting Ryan Gravenberch. Everyone said, just keep an eye out on it on transfer deadlines. But it looks like Bayern Munich don't really want to let him go. And then all of a sudden we get the opportunity to bring the lad in who he wanted from Ajax years ago. Mm-hmm. And he gets his chance to bring him in, and you're seeing why. I will not have any Ryan Gravenberch slander. I absolutely love that lad. And I think at that point, you probably were looking at a midfield three of Endo, McAllister, Szoboszlai. And then we were like, uh-oh, wait there. We've got McAllister, who's just an all-round better player. And we've seen in the likes of the Aston Villa game, he's right to have that place in those games. Endo struggled slightly in the likes of Newcastle, and he needs to get up to speed. Fabinho came in and didn't slot straight into Liverpool's best DM that I've ever seen. We did have Javier Mascherano, but Fabinho, that I've put you on a pedestal there, lad. He didn't come in straight away and just take the shit.
He also wasn't 31 when he came in as well.
Exactly.
I think the only thing I can say categorically is that Endo isn't the long-term solution at the end.
Yes.
Other than that, I've no idea if it is a training thing behind the scenes, whether, I talked about it the other day with somebody, I was like, look, when Lovren comes in from Southampton, he looks great at Southampton because he's got a centre-back that doesn't move, he's got full-backs that don't go further. We used to talk about this all the time. He's got fucking Romeo sat in front, who's never more than 5 yards away from. When he comes to Liverpool, it's a different kettle of fish. When you're fighting relegation season in, season out with Stuttgart in the German League, and you move to be a DM at Liverpool Football Club, there is going to be a massive period of adaptation. And maybe in a month's time, and I was the one saying I think he'll stay with McAllister, maybe in a month's time, Endo is a better fit. But right now he's not. We make these hard, fast judgments on things we can't possibly understand.
And it goes back to, exactly. It's like it's speed of play and understanding, and McAllister just understands it now better that we've got limited options of who to play
in
there.
I'm assuming, because he must do, because he's playing him.
There's no one there. We don't own anyone at the football club who both understands the role, understands how it's played, and has the technical proficiency to do it. So it's like the best of a bad situation. And again, the margins, I don't know how big the margins are. I think that's what you're saying as well, between Endo and McAllister. All I know is McAllister keeps getting picked, and I'm watching Endo's performances, trying to work out, or trying to see an obvious reason why he should be starting ahead. And I've seen people saying he was one of the best players against Leicester. I thought he was fine against Leicester. I don't think he was brilliant against Leicester. I just thought he was fine compared to his things. Now, if that's his new base level and the next time he plays he's better than that, amazing. That's what we're all looking for and hoping for. And
Leicester aren't in the Premier League either.
Also, they're a first division.
It's as much as, you're right on the end of stuff, it's as much as getting an Endo of a specialist six into that role as it is getting McAllister into his best role. Because I think we're doing him a disservice, and we're not doing him any favours by him playing the six all the time. Like I said earlier, he's low in confidence.
It's all great though if we put better eights on the pitch, but then the guy who gets past the ball from the centre halves gets pressed to death because he doesn't have a picture of the players around him and where those need to be. You play that six on a knife edge, an absolute knife edge. Remember Arsenal first game of the season, 2016. We obviously go on and win that game, but we go a goal down because we get caught doing that. We are back to play, trying to turn it round. Lallana's just
when Moreno goes for a bet and he runs on, thinking the pass is coming to him.
Yeah, exactly. I think it might even be Lallana in that space, but then
we clock it and we're better at it moving forward. But that's the thing, you need to, we're prefacing people who can pass the ball and people who can deal with being under pressure, and it, hopefully Endo gets it and that'll be loads better. But I don't think it's a some sort of like clock bias or whatever that's doing it. He's going to judge all the players on merit and whatever gives him the best chance to kind of succeed or be what it is. He's just very briefly, sorry Chloe, we do need to wrap up. Question marks remain on the defence. Anyone think this is something that can be sorted with what we've got? Will it be sorted by a DM, or does it need personnel transfers to fix this?
Oh. I don't think we're going to fulfil the potential of our system without changes.
To the back line?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think Robertson's been all right, actually.
He has been, but he's been good. But that's what I'm saying. The potential, you might just limit it by not replacing him for someone different.
Yeah,
you think that's still the left back thing, so we do as well. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I don't think we're. It feels to me from the outside looking in like we've not gone all in on it because we know that there's a bit of a problem there, and that's why we're sort of half in, half out, and just not committing to it completely.
Yeah,
that's what it feels like, and yeah. I hate saying that because Rowe's literally one of my favourite players that we've had in the last 20, 30 years. I love everything about him. I love what he's done for the football club. But there is also a time when you kind of have to move on. And I'm not saying it's now, but it's soon.
It's just good. You don't want to be saying like we're trying to copy everything City do, but they play with four centre-backs in a back four. And it feels weird, and football will change again. You know what I mean? So there might be another evolution in the next year or two where you do need someone who's a bit more technically proficient or smaller or quicker or whatever. But that's a good benchmark for me of what you're doing. We've already, in having Trent, we've already got a more attacking player than either Arsenal or City have in those inverted roles. So it's more
defenders though because of that. There's a balance there, isn't there?
A couple of people mention it. BW saying Quanta is the future, could be left centre back. Yeah. And CC says Quanta has been a major Brucey bonus. Yeah, totally agree on that one. I think that's been one of the positives to really come from this.
Unexpected. That emergence has really caught me off guard, to be honest with you. I fancied him to sort of have it at some point and breakthrough at some point, but I did not think he'd make that quantum leap from Bristol Rovers on loan for a little bit to playing in the Premier League and doing really well. So credit to him.
Absolutely.
Also, Matip is above Konate for me in the pecking order right now, and I think he's being unbelievable. But I couldn't have told you that had happened before a ball had kicked. Both of them are boss.
Yeah.
And on the day, I think Matip's one of the best centre-backs in the league. I think he's incredible. He's just far too injury-prone. Yeah. But I would never have thought he'd have been above Konate.
Absolutely. So we're going to do some more top four title chat over on the Bias Football podcast, which follows on from this over on redmenplus.com. We're going to be picking up on some of the results, focusing on the Arsenal City game from yesterday evening as well. And then, looking at top for how it's all poised and discussing Liverpool's position within it over on that show. So do come and join us. Chris, did you set a code up in the end?
Steve did, and it's in the WhatsApp, and it's still break.
It's still
BREAK for 50% off a captain subscription. It runs until Sunday evening at 11:59 because we're really good people, and we're bored without football. So we know that you're going to be bored without football. So that's why we've done a 50% off deal for you. So get over to redmenplus.com, 50% off. Use the code BREAK, BREAK. You can have all the Redmen goodness in your life.
Yearly or monthly, was that, Tony?
Yearly.
Cool. Quality, thank you so much for joining us. Do involve yourself with that code. The Bias Football Podcast is always worth the price of admission. But thank you so much to Dan, to Chloe, to Chris, to me, and to you, of course, and to Joe in production as well. Really.
Whatever, thanks, Paul. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, me. Come and join us for that and have a boss week. Otherwise, we will return next Monday with more Redmen Originals goodness.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.